Deborah, with her 30 years of being an entrepreneur and creating over 7 companies, knows exactly what it means to accept the mission. When you make that decision, when you accept the mission to become a solopreneur, to take yourself and your talents to market, then you embrace a life of not only unlimited possibilities, but also the unknown. It's an elixir of fear and bravery that only someone who's taken the leap really understands. On our show, Deb digs deep with her guest to highlight what you, the listener, wants to know. The stories, the whys, and the hows to navigate the journey to success. Get ready to hear from some of the most incredible mission takers from Generation Z to Boomers. So sit up, perk up, and get ready to be blown away. Now here is your host, Deborah Drummond.
Welcome back. Welcome. I know some of you are like, what? The name has changed, and it has for a lot of reasons. And what a better show. What a better show we have in store for you around Mission Accepted. So what is that? So that is what you do. That is what you do when you are an entrepreneur or an entrepreneur, or you're breaking your way as a creative, or you're in media. You accept the mission. And I know that you guys have come on to hear yet another inspiring story about what it was like to do that. And not only what is it like to accept the mission, but why the heck do we stay? Because it's not just one mission. It doesn't come across your desk once. It actually comes across multiple times. And the more you're in it, the more missions that you take, and honestly, the more fun it gets too. So we bring in unbelievable guests that share their mission so that you can take those gemstones and apply them into your life in whatever way, whether it's the mission of parenting, we all know about that, or whether you as well have taken on about being an entrepreneur. So welcome to the show. We have an incredible guest with us, and his name is Matt. And the reason why I was saying that this truly is going to be a mission accepted show is because he is the son of a pastor, and that in itself is its own mission. And how the heck, Matt, did you go from a son of a pastor to actually taking this on yourself and becoming an entrepreneur?
A very zigzag path. Let's put it that way. By the way, thanks for having me. I'm honored and excited to be here. It'll be a fun conversation. So I am the least likely entrepreneur ever. That's what I jokingly refer to myself, because I had no plans to get into this. Like you said, homeschooled, pastor's kid, and introvert on top of it, and a musician. So I picked up the drums when I was still in diapers, and then picked up other things along the way, like piano and bass and stuff. And so I've always played, always had instruments around, but always figured I'd be in some sort of like mission work. And circle around to 20s, started a real estate business with the impeccable timing of starting it in 06, got out in 07 and said, okay, well, there was things that I liked and things that I didn't like. And I realized later that the things that I liked about it were like marketing and team building / leadership. And that all came back around because I got into an agency in my mid 30s that took advantage of all that stuff. A lot of their clients were top real estate agents. So it all kind of came full circle, and all of those skills that I'd picked up over the years of bouncing from one thing to another, kind of looking for what I was going to do, all came together in one position. It also worked well because I spent about 5 years chasing the dream as a musician. And in that time, I built up things like, okay, how do you build a WordPress site? And I started doing a little bit of marketing work for a piano studio. And, you know, all of a sudden I'm doing like this freelance marketing stuff. And so I parlayed that at a job into an agency, right? So just working for somebody else, making 35K a year, and got the opportunity to go out on my own. And I grabbed it and I never looked back, and ended up starting a podcast production agency. Everything just kind of was one relationship to another that led to those things and how I got pulled into it. But the end result is that I have an amazing business that supports kind of a life of creativity. I'm able to work on music again. I don't need to make any money off of the music, so it's only about the impact that I make. I've got the business down to where I only work in the mornings. I don't schedule appointments or meetings in the afternoon. Mondays, I basically don't have appointments at all. I've got it really systematized and streamlined so that I only work on it in the times when I'm freshest and my best. And then I can work on music later in the afternoon and into the evening. So I have exactly what I set out to build, which is a business that supports the creativity that I still want to have, but it doesn't require me to make a living off of my art, which takes a lot of the pressure off. So anyway, that's the story.
That's an incredible story. And I can hear, it's like I always say, I can hear my audience and they're like, how, but I want to go back to the moment where you accepted the mission. I want to go back to where you're making $35,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for some people that's great, for some people that's not satisfactory and everything in between. And what made you decide to go in the direction? The opportunity appeared, as many of us have many opportunities and even more so. So what was the pivotal decision about? What was the moment about? If you could go back there and go, what made me decide to do that?
I can pinpoint it. I haven't thought about this in a while. I was sitting on the beach in Pacific Beach here in San Diego with the CEO of the company I was working for. And I was working for him directly in the office, and we had struck up a friendship. And he just turns and looks at me and he's like, you know why you'll never be as good at marketing as I am? And I'm like, well, gee, tell me why. Okay. He's like, because you're not playing with your own money. And I'm like, okay, tell me more. And he just said, look, man, you can work for me. He's like, you can play with my money and you'll get good. He's like, you'll never get great unless you go out and you do your own thing and it's your own money and your own life online and you have to make it work. He's like, if I were you, I would make it my, he didn't put it this way, but he said, basically make it your mission to become a professional in this thing that you're doing. Call it marketing, call it whatever, but you know, become a professional. And that was kind of the crossroads. And I said, absolutely. Like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. This is, if I do it well, it'll support all the other things that I want to do. And he was so right. I mean, he was so right at every level. Like, I did not get good at it until I was out of it and out on my own and had to figure stuff out. But yeah, that was kind of the moment where I'm like, yes, this is the mission and I accept the mission.
That's incredible. And I think it's important to note, because we all kind of have those pivotal scream louder than not moments, right? And sometimes someone else is inviting, sometimes someone's pushing us out of the nest, sometimes it's a phone call. And I think it's important to remind people that it's not, it doesn't come with all of the, you know, it doesn't come with the kit and the batteries included. Sometimes you just get the model, then you got to go buy the glue, and then you got to go buy the batteries or whatever it is. But it's that sense of knowingness. And, congratulations for the gentleman that actually shared that with you, because, you know, knowing you that I know now, if you worked for me, I'd want you to stay.
It's really hard. Yes, when you have somebody good. Yeah. Like, now that I'm in that position, yeah, I have a really hard time. When you have somebody that's a rock star, yeah, you want to hang on to them. It's hard to kick them out of the nest when you know they should go.
Yeah, that's amazing. So it's those moments. It reminds me, your story reminds me of a story before I got into the music industry, and then I got from music into entrepreneurship and therefore. And I remember clear as day, like if someone was to ask me, I could pretty well, if I thought about it, tell you what I was wearing. It was this moment where I was standing and I thought, I wanted to go join the forces, and I was 17 years old, and there's no forces in my family. There's no military, there's no nothing. And I took the bus, which was a big deal back then, to take the bus back then, as if I'm, but you know, I'm not 20, took the bus from where I lived into downtown Vancouver, which was a big deal. There was no SkyTrain or anything else. And I stood outside the military office, and I must've stood there for hours. I might've been 17, had someone walked up and said, would you like me to open the door for you? I would have found the bravery to walk through, but I never did. I turned around, got on my little bus and got back home, and ended up going way more into the music industry. And then music took me to entrepreneurship. But how interesting how things turn out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is wild. I was not expecting that to go into a chapter of your life that I did not know at all. Like, I did four tours and, you know, came back, crushed boot camp. Didn't go in the door. That's really interesting. Something like that was the difference between you having a completely different path in life.
Huh. Right. So I went back. Someone turned me onto the music industry from, like, honestly, just like, hey, I think you should put a tray in your hand because I really like how you sound. Like, someone who owned a club, we were at a big event, and I was talking about how this waitress should have done a better job with us that night. And he goes, why don't you show up tomorrow and I'll throw a tray in your hand? And I'm like, why don't you do that? Which took me to meeting bands, to this, to help. And it went down this whole love for music. And I was kind of showing off my picture of Janis Joplin before we started. And then that lifestyle led me to, I think I want to find a different lifestyle that's a little bit healthier. And I went from that to health and wellness, but I've always still in my heart, not that I want to go play in that arena, but if anyone from the military, you know, not that you're going to now call me, if anyone from the military calls me and wants anything in. When I created a holistic health studio, the forces were allowed to come at a price that was like practically free. So anyway, something there. Who knows?
That's interesting. You know, I think there's, you know, what makes people really uncomfortable about just that idea that, you know, one person could have opened that door and your life would have been completely different. Mm-hmm. It makes people really uncomfortable that we are, there's so much creativity involved in how our lives turn out. And it all comes down to decisions that we make, and those decisions can be influenced by something as simple as somebody not opening a door and kind of giving us a push in a certain direction or nudging us off in a different direction. Mm-hmm. I think we want to look at things as if there's fate and there's things that are guiding us, and those things can all be true to an extent, but we're wildly uncomfortable with the fact that, like, we have a massive amount of creativity and freedom in our decision-making, and our lives can go in a lot of different directions. And it's kind of up to us. I mean, to me, that was freeing. Like, I came from a very legalistic background of, if you're not on the right path, you're going to get blasted. Like, bad things are going to happen to you. And so I have that in my background. So for me to step out of that and get into this realm of creativity was actually very freeing for me. It makes other people very uncomfortable. They want to feel like fate is behind them pushing in a certain direction. I don't believe that that's necessarily true. I think creativity, we are human beings. We are endowed with the ability to make our own choices. And we have the ability to choose a whole bunch of different types of lives that we can have. It makes people uncomfortable, but to me, it's very liberating. You know, it's one of the best parts of being alive.
I relate. I was talking to a woman yesterday, and I've recently been calling myself an entrepreneur or just a creative, right? And I say, because it makes people uncomfortable sometimes. I always find myself saying, I know it's going to sound like I do a lot, you know, when I'm talking to people, you know, like I have to dance. And it's like, and she said to me, so I said, oh, I've been calling myself an entrepreneur. It just kind of makes it easier for people to understand that I'm a little multifaceted. And she said, and so we were having this conversation, and she had come up with a word for herself as well, which was incredibly interesting, which described the same thing. And we were almost like thirsty for each other. We'd never met before. She literally bought a copper pot that I was selling because she likes to cook, and she bought this copper pot. She goes, you know, you ended up giving me a great deal. And we ended up having a conversation, and she's a philanthropite. She calls herself a philanthropite. I'm like, okay.
I'm going to have to explain that one to me. Yeah. What's the back half of that pipe?
Well, so she does these, she creates these companies that don't necessarily, like all of what I do is based around health and wellness and entrepreneurship and creating platforms for entrepreneurs and creating business. But my sector is health and wellness. Hers is variable, right? Mm-hmm. Marketing company, incredible, you know, restaurant, Airbnb, real estate statistics. And so she has all of these businesses that she creates, and with the whole premise and the energy of a philanthropist, where she can create things, create revenue, make impact, and move on. But she does companies instead of donations. So, sure. It's a new word,
like
I'm sure.
Like a socialpreneur or something like social impact entrepreneur. Okay, that makes sense to me. Yeah. Okay, very cool. All right. That's awesome.
Oh, sorry about that. My camera went bleep there for those of you that are watching and not listening. But look, now that you know everything about me and Matt, let's talk about you guys out there. Okay. There's some, you've created some interesting books that talk about some interesting things that I had never heard of before. I mean, I know the word micro and I know the word famous, but you know, when people get a hold of this energy of the entrepreneurship, you know, it's like, we, by nature, we're all in kind of people. Can you share this concept and this idea around being micro famous?
Yes. And it's funny because I think it was heavily influenced by my background as a musician and watching how and why bands break out into the mainstream. So the idea of micro famous, like in the business world, would be the equivalent of like me or clients of mine, where they can go to the grocery store and nobody recognizes them. But when they set foot in the right conference or the right business event, they're like swamped and like people are asking them for pictures and autographs and they're clamoring for their advice. Like that's a big thing. And they're not just fans, but they're like asking them really deep, interesting questions about entrepreneurship. And to me, that's the ideal for myself and for a lot of the people that I know. There are certain people in business that absolutely have an insatiable motor inside to be Tony Robbins famous, and good for them. God bless you. Go do it. But there's a lot of other people that are like, I don't need that. I don't need to speak on every stage. I don't need to be speaking every weekend, God forbid, because I don't want to live in airports and hotel rooms. And I don't need to be on Oprah. You know, like I want ideal clients. I want a great lifestyle. I want to hang out with my spouse or kids or whatever. You know, like I want a great life, and I want to impact people. And the question is, well, how do you actually do that from a marketing perspective? Because if you're anybody that wants to make an impact, your natural inclination is to go for as many people as possible. On the other side, everybody on the receiving end wants something that's super custom for them. So those two things are always in conflict with you. There's a tension there, right? Like we're always pulling to impact more people and expand who we serve. Everybody on the receiving end wants something that's super custom and personal for them as much as humanly possible. And when they work with somebody, they want to know, how many people just like me have you worked with? How many, where's the success stories? Where's the testimonials from people that look exactly like me? That's what they want. So those two things are always in tension. So micro famous means, like, in the context of business, you don't need millions of eyeballs on your content. You don't need to be Gary Vee. You don't need to be on social media 10 hours a day, right? You don't need millions of followers on Instagram. In fact, I know people that do, and they still can't make it work. That doesn't bring success. So that's one of the things that breaks your brain when you start running into people that have millions of downloads and hundreds of thousands of followers, and they're having to sell something to make their rent, or they can't sell a product to save their life, you know, whatever. So I just came to this conclusion that, like, most of the people in my world that I was really drawn to, that they care a lot about impact, but they also care about lifestyle. And so the ideal for them and for myself is to be micro famous. In other words, I can go to the grocery store, nobody knows who I am, but when I go to the right places full of my ideal people, they already know who I am because of something like a podcast that I host. And then the introduction is already made for me. You know, I can go in those networking rooms, and as an introvert, I can mingle because I know there's going to be people I'm going to run into that knows somebody that I interviewed, or maybe they already know me. Maybe they've already heard of my podcast. It's really cool as an introvert to go to an event and stand in line at the Starbucks and the hotel venue outside the event and be recognized in line at Starbucks. Like, that's for an introvert, that's a great icebreaker. So when somebody goes, I think I know you, it's like, let's figure it out. That's what micro famous comes from. And like I said, I think it has to do with the musician part of me. Like, I just watched, like, I never had popular taste in music. All of my favorite bands were like Alice in Chains and Dream Theater and all these bands that were like super niche underground stuff. But they had rabid fan bases because they weren't the mainstream that everybody else listened to. Like, that's what made those fan bases so crazy about them. And I see the same stuff happen in the business world. And I think we should just, if that's what you want, go out and build with that in mind, I guess, rather than building for the maximum number of eyeballs.
It's ingenious in a way that it kind of alleviates a lot of pressure, even for the person who wants to have that fame. Like you said, the Tony Robbins fame or the Oprah fame. It's great because it shows that there's progression, and kind of like where I was sitting at outside of the forces, and I could have gone this path or this path. To get to even a place of micro famous is a great place to make a decision whether you want to go further, right?
100%.
Right? Because you're like, you can, and also recognizing where that is a process for you. And for some people, that's the goal. I think there's too much, and I think we could all agree, but there's companies that, you know, make your numbers look bigger on social media, and there's numbers because of the perception and the perceived success that you have. And then when we know that people are asking, so how many people have you worked with, and how many subscribers on your podcast, and how many this and how many that, it raises that angst, I would say, to be bigger, to be out there. And what does that look like? You know, and what does that look like? And does it financially serve you? Because it's just an automatic, I have more customers, I make more money. But is that the truth? You know,
it's definitely not the truth. Yeah. Yeah. That's, you have to see it up close. And that's what breaks people's brains. What broke my brain the first time was seeing it on the inside from two different shows that I was hosting in the same space. I had different co-hosts on each one. And so each of those podcasts was aimed at a different part of the market. One was aimed at the mainstream and the beginners. The other was aimed at like the top, the affluent, the top 1% of the market. Obviously, the one that was aimed at the affluent top 1% got way fewer downloads and didn't make any of the top 10 lists and didn't get any of the accolades on social media and all this stuff. It also built a multi six-figure coaching consulting business in like 2 years, bam, just like that. And so I was looking at that going, okay, I'm on the backside. I co-host both of these podcasts and the one that was easier to monetize, the host of that wasn't even very active on social media and had a tiny email list, right? Just none of the advantages that the other show had, but it was way easier to monetize. So that's what broke my brain the first time around, was just seeing it for myself from the inside. And then the longer you go, in my case, we tried a lot of different things to monetize that bigger show. And we finally found something that works. So we do make six figures a year off the back of that podcast now, 6 years later, right? It took us a while to get it. But in the meantime, we had a big audience and we tried a whole lot of different things. And you'd be surprised how frustrating it is to run a mainstream big numbers podcast that you have a hard time monetizing and getting people to buy stuff off of. It's not actually a very fun position to be in because you feel like you're the problem. Like, why aren't people buying from me? It's like, well, maybe the problem isn't you. Maybe it's the audience you built just aren't buyers, and that's okay. And that's what we built a lot on the back of that show. And so because I've been down that road, when somebody comes to me and goes, oh, I want to bam, big podcast, big numbers, all this stuff, I'm like, maybe. Or maybe you'll run that podcast and you get exactly what you want and you're frustrated 2 years in because they don't buy anything from you. Because that happens a lot, and it happens way more than most influencers will admit openly. They'll talk to you about it behind the scenes. They'll whisper about it in the hallways outside the conference rooms, but they don't talk about that on stage. So yeah, I think that anybody in the creative field, I mean, everybody's probably read by now, you know, the 1,000 True Fans. And I think a lot of musicians nowadays, especially, and maybe even creative artists, are kind of on board with that model. The question is like, how do you get there? That has not really creeped into business yet. It's just now kind of starting to make some inroads, that 1,000 True Fans mentality, because of what you talked about. There's so much pressure that if you're not on your way to being the next Tony Robbins, you are irrelevant. I would like to see that completely smashed because I don't think it works.
Well, and I think it's very interesting. I believe the reason why people are starting to have those conversations or even be transparent is because in the last chunk of time, obviously it's been accelerated for people to be converting and creating and finding new ways. I mean, this has been a massive, you know, two to three year creative time in the world of entrepreneurialism. And when you see what other people are doing, you tend to think that that's the blueprint. Yeah. So you don't have time to question it until you're sitting there with your accountant and you're like, how many hours am I putting in? You know, what's my ROI? Because you're so busy in the build, you just think that you're going to get there, and you're going to get there, and strategic planning and having conversations with your accountant or whomever you do your books with, or your CFO or what have you, until you start to have people feedback that information. I don't think people even had really time to question it because they haven't had time to experience it yet. We talked about this earlier, right?
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. Do you know who Sam Ubbins is? Consulting.com. He has a big program that's like a $2,000 package called Consulting Accelerator, which he just shut down apparently. So he was running his like an educational online course business. He grew that to 30 million a year. The problem was he was spending 10 million of it in ads to get that 30 million in sales. So he just closed down his beginner level program, the $2,000 program. He just cut off most of the ads and said he streamlined the business down. They lost 22 of that 30 million a year in revenue. They're still more profitable now than they were when they were running at full speed, 30 million a year revenue. So people are starting to figure it out, like, because now people have kind of pushed that limit in some of these new business models that just came along within the last 10 or 15 years, things like selling courses online or things like that. And they've pushed it as far as they can go. Now ad costs are going up and they're looking at it going, man, is it worth it? Is it worth it to give a third or a half of my income to Facebook just to get the big top line numbers that gets me on a stage to talk about it somewhere when I know I'm not actually making any more money on it? And they're all starting to pull back and go, maybe I should think about my lifestyle and put my family first and maybe put some creative pursuits back into my life and stuff. I think it just took a while when all these new business models for the internet kind of came along and exploded. Like, people just went all in and went, oh my God, this is amazing. Let's do it. Let's push it. And now they're going, oh, okay. maybe now we want to find the balance between lifestyle and creative pursuits and the business, so it doesn't take over our entire being and we're not giving half of our revenue to Facebook.
So interesting and so timely, right? Talk about podcasts. This is a, you know, we're on one. They're sexy. They're attractive. That's what people see. There's also all sides to podcasts. And because they're sexy and they're media, and media is sexy and it's a hot topic and everything from social media. And gosh knows, I feel like I've been in a social media school for 3 years. From someone who did business belly to belly. I mean, that's more my generation, right? I went from generation, you know, and so let's talk about podcasts a little bit, because I get the question a lot. I would imagine you especially get podcast questions a lot because that's part of your work. What do I do? Are they worth it? What does it take? All those questions, right? Because
Well, it's hard for me to be impartial, but I do my best, because podcasting changed my life. It took me from just being a random person that worked at some agency somewhere to all of a sudden being an influencer and essentially micro famous in my corner of the world in 18 months. It was 18 months from starting my podcast to doing a sold out breakout session at a national event all the way at the end of the end of the country, 18 months later. That's what it can do for you. It can make you micro famous in a certain space. If you position it well, if you target it well, if you're good at it, not everybody's going to set the world on fire with their personality, but you know, if podcasting is a good medium where you like to have deep, interesting conversations with fascinating people and you know how to ask good questions and have good conversations, yeah, you have a legitimate chance at becoming a micro famous influential person in a certain space. Now, whether it goes beyond that point, that depends on the audience, and it depends on how much you tap into the culture, the zeitgeist of what's happening in the world. You know, you look at somebody like a Joe Rogan, and I can point out four specific waves in the culture that he rode. You've got stand-up comedy, reality TV, then UFC, then comedy podcasting, bam, 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 wave after wave after wave that he rode. And finally, he ends up being the number one in that comedy podcast category. Next thing you know, that comedy podcast category, because of the cultural wave behind it, ends up being one of the biggest categories of podcasting in general. So guess what? He ends up being, you know, the biggest podcaster on the planet. You know, one of my clients the other day asked, like, what's the difference? What's the difference between us out here in entrepreneur land and a Joe Rogan? I'm like, it's not execution. Joe Rogan and his team are not any better at executing podcasts than probably what you and I are doing right here, right? Mm-hmm. The difference is the culture. So if you can find something and you have an idea whose time has come, podcasting can propel that idea even further into the culture and help you build a huge audience. And that's what's cool about podcasting. You and I could be speaking to 100 people, 1,000 people, or 1,000,000 people. It doesn't take any more effort. We didn't have to get on 50 more planes. We didn't have to stay in 50 more hotel rooms. So the scalability is what's so attractive about it, because you can have the same conversation to reach 1,000,000 people for literally the same cost. And so it's really a matter of just, what do you have to say? What mission are you on? And if you're on a mission that taps into something that people believe in, a podcast is so accessible, so shareable, so easy to spread, so easy for people to tell other people about through word of mouth, that if they agree and they latch on to your mission, the show will grow. 60% of podcast growth is word of mouth. So it's just about getting people enrolled in your mission. And if you do that, your podcast absolutely will grow. And the only question is just how much. How much can you enroll people in that mission? It determines how much your podcast will grow.
And I get a question a lot, and I know, because we are in the world of entrepreneurship where people do more than one thing. So, you know, you just talked that example very much so. And even with yourself, you know, marketing, consulting, podcasting, you know, marketing agent by morning and musician by night. So, right. And people say, they ask me, they're like, how many podcasts should one person have? Should I have more than one podcast? Yeah. You know, you've got this audience and that audience. Should I build one audience as big as I can, or should I diversify? Do you have an answer to that?
Those are amazing questions. And yes, I I deal with those questions all the time and I have opinions, but honestly, I reserve the right to change my opinion 5 minutes from now. So here's what I think right now. I think if you have something to sell, there is value in having at least one podcast where you do both networking and teaching all in one platform. In other words, you have a place where you have conversations, and then on that same platform, you also just turn on the recording and speak directly to the audience, because that's where they get to know you the best. And that's where they're probably going to connect with you the best and actually buy what you have to sell. I would call those solo episodes. Now, I have also experimented with splitting those into two shows. Now I have an agency, so I can just tell my minions, hey, we're going to do this. And it's easy, right? If you don't have minions, it's a little harder to do that. But yeah, if you have minions, that's very easy to experiment with. So at one point I split off into two shows, and I had a show that was nothing but conversations and a show that was nothing but teaching. I've done it. It works. That works too. Now here's the deal if you're multi-passionate, because I think that's really what people are, that's the big struggle, right? I think that everything has to be branded in its own little silo. So if you go look for my music under Microfamous, you won't find it, right? Because nobody, like the business, there's just not the same audience, right? It's not the same people. If you go look for prayer prompts on YouTube, you'll find the music. I don't run a podcast for that. It is what it is, right? It's on YouTube for a reason, because that's the place where it's music is most easy to share and discover. So I think that you have to silo everything. However, it is possible in some cases to have a personal platform that's about you, that's about whatever your big mission is. And you can talk about the various projects that you have and the various things that each have their own little silo and they're each branded, but you can talk about them all in one central location. So it is possible. It's hard. It's hard. I think the secret is you've got to find maybe something that's a common thread that runs through all of your different projects that you're involved in, or it just has to be personal. The Tony Robbins podcast. Nobody cares that it's not called something else because it's Tony Robbins and he can call the Tony Robbins podcast. So you can absolutely do something like that, right? You can just have it be about you and you are the person. If they connect with your personality, it works great. So one of the things that I'm working on right now that kind of ties together a whole bunch of interest for me is the podcast I'd like to have you on, which is called One Book That Changed My Life. That gives me a place to have really awesome, deep conversations about books and about people's lives and how they were affected by those books. Then I can also do solo episodes where I just talk about the books that I like, and I can just talk about stuff that interests me, right? So it gives me a place where I can talk about all that. And I can also drop references to Microfamous and the music and like all that stuff. It's like my platform to kind of do what I want with. But here's the secret to that the show is branded and it's built around one clear and compelling idea. It just so happens that when you show up for that, I know you're probably the kind of person that'll be interested in this other stuff that I can mention. So that's the ideal, is you find something that actually has a brand of its own. It's based around a single powerful idea that actually does cut through the noise. And then when it attracts those people, you're able to kind of send them off in various directions to the other projects that you're involved in based on how you talk about them. One of my clients would call that inline mentions. You just kind of casually go, oh, you know, when I wrote the Microfamous book, and you just kind of like drop the reference in there. Yeah. So that's the ideal, is you have that a separate brand that has its own personality, its own identity. It has the potential to build and spread. And then when people show up for that, you siphon them off into their own little silos to tell them, hey, go check this out. Go check that out for your other projects. Hopefully that answers that question.
It does. So I know, and you know, you can, you know, put a disclaimer to this one as well, you know?
Okay.
You know, no, really.
Oh, like that, like I reserve the right to change my mind.
Okay. Did we get that contract signed? right. We all have our own stories of entrepreneurs, how many years you've been in. You know, I've been an entrepreneur for 30 years. But wow, it's just been so different in every part of that journey has been completely different because generationally things have changed. And so now we're in this wave of media. Now we're in this wave of, and people are like, what do I gauge myself? I mean, everyone wants to be, you know, Rogan. I was like, oh, I could have a podcast like, but can you, and is it worth it? Those are some of the questions that we're asking ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then there's the conversation that I had with a wonderful colleague that says, you know, there's a high ratio of people that start podcasts that don't complete them or don't get past their 100th episode, because it really is, there's a certain amount of time and energy and dedication to this. Really, it's a form of marketing, right? Oh, it's a form of marketing. So where do you see, so people are starting to have this conversation around monetizing. They're like, ooh, I could have a podcast that I monetize. So in terms of monetizing podcasts, that's a whole, I think that's a whole sector that people don't really know a whole lot about. Mm-hmm. Do you think we're going in that direction from a podcast standpoint?
Yes, about as quickly as a snail moves. yeah, Apple seems to be wildly uninterested in helping us with that. They could be making billions. They could be building the world's best audio advertising platform, and they seem wildly uninterested in doing so. I don't know why. So no, here's where monetization is at. If you're in business, your best bet is promoting the things that you sell, as long as you're able to sell them online or, you know, nationally, right? If you have a local brick and mortar, whatever. But yeah, for most of your audience, if you're selling, you know, if you're selling music or creative artworks, or if you're an entrepreneur or something like that, if you can sell your stuff to anybody in the country, your best bet is promoting what you have to sell and building your list. So you should always have two places to send people. One is to the main absolute top of the, you know, like, here's how you hire me. The second way should be just how do you get people into the list. There's a whole section of the book where I dig into like the economics of sponsorships, why it's so hard to build a sponsorship that works long-term, because it's like, you have background in like the health and fitness area and like the MLM space and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You know, like think about mapping out what the splits are. Right? Where everybody gets the incentives just right. You're like, it's like you're fiddling with about 50 different dials to keep everybody incentivized to do the right things. So people keep recruiting and some people buy and the company's incentivized and they don't go out of business because they pay too much and all this stuff, right? Like there's about 50 different dials. That's what podcast sponsorships are like. You're constantly fiddling with the dial to keep the sponsor happy, not overload your audience, keep you happy so it's worth it to do it. Like I had a client that was making $1,500 a month in sponsorships and like Honest company was sponsoring her and like, but the sponsors rotate out every 2 or 3 months. She finally ditched it. Like, it's not worth it. It's like not worth the time just to record the new sponsor bits and stuff like that. It was, it was more pain than it was worth. And she was making what most people would say is good money. It was more than offsetting the cost of the podcast. And so it's really hard to build win-win sponsorships right now. Now, if somebody like Apple came across the top and said, hey, we got this, we'll insert all the ads, we'll give you a cut of the revenue, we take our cut, everybody goes home happy. If they solve that problem, that could change the entire landscape.
Well, we're going to see how that rolls out, but right?
It'd be nice if they did that for us.
So I'm going to kind of take us totally off conversation because I know we're kind of probably winding down and I want to take us off conversation a little bit, to a little bit more about you. So you've had a journey through entrepreneurship. You've clearly said yes. You've said yes more than a number of times. You help others do that. You're pretty strong in your whole media presence. Surprise us. What's one of the biggest surprises or something very cool that happened to you that you just didn't see coming? Like, you know, my country is probably really glad listening to this that I didn't walk through the door. They're like, you know, is there something that just blew you away? Made it worth it?
Oh man.
I know. It's a big one.
Yeah. Okay. So here is a moment. On the first podcast I started, we had a little bit of an inside joke running. I don't have any kids. I'm semi-single or whatever you want to call it. But my co-host on that show invented a fake wife and fake kids for me so that we could do sales role plays and stuff where he would refer to my wife and kids. And eventually the kids became overweight, diabetic, insulin. They required insulin and that got bigger. Like everything got bigger and more outrageous. So it became this running joke on the show for years and years. And I was at a conference one time and I wasn't even sure if I knew anybody at this particular one. And somebody came up to me and said, Matt, how's Julie and the kids? And just like quoted the exact inside joke from the podcast. I'm like, that was a really cool moment. Cause it's so far beyond just like showing up to an audience that wants to hear what you have to say. And it was meeting someone that felt like they knew you, and you have no idea who this person is, but they feel like they have a personal relationship with you. You've done enough like radio and TV and media and all that stuff to know what that feels like. I'm sure it's a really cool feeling. That was something that I was really surprised by, because I am an introvert. I tend to not want to be bothered when I'm out and about. I like to do my business. I want to have my earbuds in. Like, I'm not a super social person when I'm out and about. That was a very cool, surprising thing.
Wow. That's interesting. That's amazing. That's great. Oh my gosh. You could get a t-shirt picture, family picture on there.
my co-host already has the picture picked out. It's hilarious. Yes. That's three amazing. Very, very, very overweight kids. I think one of them is smoking. Something like that.
That's awesome. Look, we're both in the world of helping entrepreneurs. I want people to, even though podcasts per se are not this place where we go into everything we do and what we offer, but look, we're on a show of entrepreneurs and creatives, and you know, it's, you know, you drink this stuff for, you know, in the morning for coffee, and everybody needs advice. Everybody needs someone to go to. People have said to me, Deb, you've done this for 30 years. How have you been successful? I said, I've either had a coach, a counselor, a therapist, an emotional intelligence, or, you know, to make that way. Like, you go down this road, you get advice from somebody, you clearly have a lot of advice to offer. So go ahead, do some shameless PR. Please tell us what books you're talking about. Like, there's, what do you do? Like, share a little bit, because Matt, people need you.
Okay. Well, I guess let me do the shameless plug while I buy some time mentally to think about what else I would say. So go to getmicrofamous.com, because that's where I write. And you can check out the podcast service. There's a link there to grab a call with me and stuff like that. If you're in the entrepreneurial game, you have a mission, you want to reach people, you want to impact people, we do all the podcast production. It's 100% done for you. We do all the guest booking, social media promotion, audio, video, the whole nine yards. So you just show up and record. You know, the things that I'm reading about are, man, like, so I have a mentor, right? And you're so right about that. I have a really, really close circle. And when I have somebody that says, Matt, you need this book, I'm literally on my phone ordering it on Amazon before they finish the sentence. Mm-hmm. That's one of the best things I could tell people. Like, one of my clients said this, is like an addendum to the famous saying, is like, the, you know, if you want to change your life, the difference is the mentors that you have, the books you read, and the podcasts you listen to. You know, so like I'm reading stuff on finance, like The Alchemy of Finance, like George Soros's book, like just I'm going at diving into history and all this stuff. But yeah, it really does come down to the mentors that you have, the books you read. And then nowadays we have podcasts to listen to, and that can change your life. You'll be a different, like, I'm a different person now than even I was 5 years ago. And you'd think in my 30s, my personality would have been set. It was not set. Like, entrepreneurship changed me, and it made me a better human being. And if you get around ultra successful people, you realize a lot of them are actually not douchey. They're some of the nicest people in the world. I don't think people that come from a low class blue collar background like I did, most of them don't realize that, but they're incredibly nice, incredibly generous. They're looking for people to mentor. I would say the biggest mistake I ever made was not finding a mentor early on and discounting that they would want to mentor somebody. Cause who am I? Now I realize that was a huge mistake, and they're looking for people to mentor. So find them, because they're out there and they want to mentor people.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. That's fantastic advice. So I think that we're going to wrap ourselves up here. I feel like I've learned so much about podcasting, and I'm on one. look, I'm not going to do some shameless PR, but
I insist upon it.
Do you?
No. Come on. It's your own show. You got to do some shameless plugging on your own show. If you can't shameless plug on your own show, where are you going to do it?
Right. Well, at least you're going to bring me on yours. No, I am. That I am going to share. And look, it's called Mission Accepted. I love and create platforms, whether it's in the books or whether it's the quotes in the planners or whether it's on, you know, being endorsed on the website, whatever it is. There's a multitude, a plethora, I call it, because it sounds more like a bouquet, doesn't it? A plethora of platforms for entrepreneurs, creatives to have exposure. You know, to really, I believe that we're all here for a reason. I was the happiest cocktail waitress ever because I was in service. Yes, I like music, but I like being in service. That's what I am. And I'm absolutely in service to entrepreneurs. It's what I am. It's what I do. I don't, you know, I don't put it on in the morning and take it off at night. It's kind of what makes me what they call a professional hippie. So I'm a gluten-free professional hippie. And if you have something that you want to write in a book or come onto the podcast and share, then you're going to reach out to me and we're going to have a conversation and it's going to be wonderful. I have as well lived my life by mentors and advisors. And probably when you said that, one of the things that probably if I was to say the mistake that I made was thinking that I was maybe too small to go ask somebody to take me to the next level. I felt like I had to stay in my wheelhouse so I could go here, but I couldn't go here because for sure I couldn't afford to go there. For sure they had other people. I'm talking, you know, I'm like, oh, I'd love to talk to them, but I think I need to take these steps before I talk to them. And you just proved it to point that's not true. I'm sure you and I both get phone calls from people that are like over the, you know, they're like, oh, thank you so much for taking my call. And I'm like, don't be ridiculous. Like, don't be ridiculous. Your time is as valuable as my time. I had a call like that yesterday. She kept saying thank you. And I'm like, stop it. Stop it. Right?
I am famously unavailable. So I get that reaction.
I'm not NASA. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Not NASA.
Right? So I'm like, you're cool. I'm cool. We're cool. And so I love working with people. Obviously, I only have time to work with not everybody, but I absolutely want to hear people that, you know, hear from people that want to, you know, I call it becoming number one in your company, even if you're the only one in your company. That's what I teach people to do. Any last words, Mr. Matt?
Oh, man, you got to put me on the spot like that. Really?
I know.
No, I have no last words. I think that's a great way to end it. Becoming the number one in your company, even if you're the only one, because it speaks to whether you're a creative or an entrepreneur, you have to approach it the same way. Who said this? I was listening to, maybe it was a football commentator. Yeah, it was a guy that washed out. He was a huge draft bust. And he said, when I go and speak into athletes that have just been drafted, they're about to come into a huge amount of money. And he's like, most of them come from very poor backgrounds. He's like, I tell them, you are now the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Act like it. And that's, I think for any entrepreneur, that's good advice.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I enjoyed our conversation immensely, and I'm sure so did everybody else. I can't wait to come on to, now I'm a little scared. I threw a couple of questions at you and threw you up. I'm like, ooh, what is he going to ask me? I'm going to have to go back and read that book that changed my life, which when, as soon as you said that to me before, I knew exactly what that was. And I think we all do. I know exactly.
Wait, okay. Yeah, lay it on me. You got to tease it a little bit.
Okay. Well, here I was. I was on a bus, me and my buses, right? I was on a bus. And I was coming home from one of my first jobs, which was the receptionist in a car dealership. And I had this book, and I don't know why, and I don't know how I got this book. But it was completely out of the wheelhouse of anything. Okay, I come from the music industry, you know, a number of years ago, not necessarily a holistic. Somehow I got the book, Shakti Gaiwan, Living in the Light. And I started reading this book, and it was like, I was sitting in the back seat of the bus, and everything kind of almost the word that comes to me is melted. It was like everything I knew to be true that no one ever told me, I was reading about. It was incredible. It was actually talking about female energy and masculine energy. I was in my 20s. No one talked like that then. And it was about being okay. For me, I think it was important being okay, being someone with all these ideas and really wanting to execute them. Because that was more of a masculine thing, right? I was a receptionist. I can tell you in school, I was given four choices. Did you want to be a nurse, a secretary, airline stewardess, or a teacher? Like that's literally how we were talked to. And the only reason I picked stewardess is because it had some sense of freedom, right? Right. Like, you know? So it was the first book that kind of unlocked that there was something about this creative energy that I had. And there was a place for it. And someone actually wrote about it. Honestly, probably it was a magical moment for me that changed everything. And from that book on, made me feel like it was okay to say yes.
Interesting. Well, I'm excited to dig into that deeper and see what else still stands out years later and like what the path was, what immediate changes you made and all that stuff. Yeah, that'll be a fun conversation. I love it.
Yeah. It reminds me of when Brene Brown says that when she read, you know, the Man in the Arena speech, how her husband said she became dangerous. And for me, I think that's what that book did, is it made me get dangerous. It was like, yes, I can do this. Yes, I can do this. My family's like, oh God. Okay. Another conversation. Again, thank you for your time today.
Thanks, Deb. I appreciate it.
Welcome. And you know what, you guys, we will see you again next week with an incredible, incredible person that is going to sit just where Matt is sitting today and telling stories that you can relate to and be inspired. And please share this. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for being visitor and listener at the same time, audio and visual.
We'll call it a visitor.
A visitor. Okay. Thanks. Bye.